Late Night City with Pete Price. Beyond the Dark.
Let's talk to a very interesting lady now. We love these features that we do. And we're going to talk now to Emma Restor. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Peter.
Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Now,
it's a pleasure.
You're an interesting lady, aren't you? Because you're a druid.
Well, yes, in some ways I am a druid. But more than that, I was a druid. And I believe you got hold of my name because a book has just been published, which is actually a classic edition of, or republished, of a book that was published 16 years ago.
Really?
So it's not, it's always interesting having something republished because it is an expression of my life as it was and not quite as it is now. So there are many things in the book that we all change and grow, don't we? We move into different worlds.
So why did you republish it? Why has it come out again? By the way, the book is called Spirits of the
Sacred Grove.
Yeah. So why has it been brought out again?
Yeah. Yes, it was the publisher's idea. And I think perhaps by demand, it's a book that was quite, although I say it myself, it was quite influential at the time when it was published in the late 1990s. When I first came into druidry, into studying druidry and looking at the whole spirituality and philosophy, what it was all about in the late 1980s, it was very much, it was very male-oriented. You know, when you think about druids, you think about old men with long white beards, don't you? And to some extent, that was how it was, not with the long white beards necessarily, but it was quite a male-focused community or spiritual movement. And I came into it thinking, looking for the old religion of Britain, and but I brought a very female attitude and a very female energy to it. And Spirits of the Sacred Grove was really the book that I wrote, looking for how a woman or a female energy would fit into what was then a fairly male.
Emma, I've got to ask, why druidry? Is it druidry or what's it?
Druidry is really what we call it in Britain.
Right.
Americans tend to call it druidism.
Right.
Because they tend to use druidisms more.
Why that? Why did you go down that road?
Druidry, if you think about it, is if for some people it's the old religion or the old spirituality of these lands of Britain. It's the spirituality of our ancestors, where we're really it's really that nature oriented, earth focused understanding of the sacred. So it's a very environmentally friendly religion, if you like. It's the religion for people who are looking after the earth. It's a spiritual philosophy that's very much looks without, you don't have to believe in anything. There's nothing supernatural about it. There's no man on a cloud. There's no literal understanding of mythology. It's very much about stories and the importance of nature and living with nature. And I was brought up by my mother and father loved the natural world, and I was brought up sort of crawling through the grass looking at beetles and identifying plants and looking after baby birds that have fallen out of trees, you know. And I when I was looking for a spirituality or a meaning to life, as I did in my late teens, early 20s, that's what I was drawn to.
It's interesting that you say that, because the way you describe it then, if we lived like that, it may be a proper better world.
Well, I would say so. There are parts of Christianity, of Islam, of all religions throughout the world where the earth is considered to be sacred, whether you think of nature as God or you think of nature as the work of God or whatever you do. If you think of nature as special, as extraordinary, as wonderful, as something that we should look after, instead of just abuse and take what we can and, you know, pollute it, destroy, then we've got to be doing better. If we live in harmony with the world around us, then it's going to be more sustainable.
Are you still a druid?
Well, in many ways, my spirituality is just the same as it was, in that I still feel very much that the natural world is primary. I am, to some extent, I think of druid, the word druid, as meaning a priest, and I'm not a priest anymore. I'm not a teacher. I don't work within the druid community anymore. I have moved out of that sort of druid pagan world into a world where I work within and for my local community. I'm much more a quiet person on the edge of life. I don't often do these interviews, whereas 10 years ago I did a lot more. So no, I'm not sure if I'm actually a druid anymore, but my spirituality is very much still nature-oriented, nature-based. I still think of nature as God, God as nature.
What is your views on Christianity?
Well, that's a huge question, because if I look at Christianity as a mystical tradition, as a tradition that's based on love and understanding, on gratitude, care, cooperation, exploration, all of those things which I think are fundamental in a lot of Christianity, then I think it's a fabulous way of life, you know, caring for others. There's so much of that in Christianity. But Christianity, which says my truth is the only truth and there is only one God, seems to me exclusive and unhelpful. If we can understand God as being the sacred, then fine. Then I can find a perennial, what we share, religion to religion. And a lot of Druids are polytheists. They believe or they acknowledge the existence of, numerous gods, and would understand Jesus and the Christian God or gods, the Holy Spirit. All of these things are ideas, understandings of consciousness, of value, of sanctity, to be existent just as all the gods of our ancestors and the gods, the Hindu gods and Allah and all these gods are there. They're different ways of talking about nature and the aspects, elements and powers of within nature and the ancestors and mythology and all of these things. So Druidry is very inclusive. It acknowledges all that nature is. And it's difficult when someone says, oh, you're wrong, I'm right. And Druids would never say that.
Are there many Druids in this country?
It's a difficult thing to quantify, because there are lots of people like me who underneath they would say, yes, I'm probably a Druid if you push me. I'm not sure I would call myself a Druid on the outside. My mother's one to start with. I think probably between 10 and 20,000 Druids or people studying or working within the Druid community. But some people would say many more.
Do young people explore it?
Yes, they do. It's interesting how these things work. In the 70s, 80s, 90s, Druidry was growing slowly. In the last 20 years, it's grown very quickly. And as a result, I think probably there are quite a few young people who have grown up within Druidry, whereas 20 or 30 years ago, the younger generation weren't involved. Now the younger generation are drawn in through their parents or other folk, or they see youngsters from families, and then they'll get involved even if their parents aren't involved. So it's there are many more. It's, you know, it's across the generations now, in a way that it wasn't so much 20 or 30 years ago when I first got involved.
Emma, let's step back to 1998. Spirits of the Sacred Grove, the world of a Druid priestess. What made you put the book together?
First of all, what I said when we first started talking, which was I found that walking into Druidry, meeting other Druids and people studying Druidry, I found it was quite male-oriented. And by that I mean not only were there a lot of men organising it, but also the way people thought was quite abstract. There was quite a lot of kind of liturgy in terms of prayers and what you were supposed to do. And I felt much more as alas, in my 30s, with a young child, I felt very emotional, and the validity of my emotion, I wanted to dance and sing and be a little bit less abstract, a bit more sort of muddy about it all, if you see what I mean. A bit more hands-on, a bit more about, you know, let's share food and dance and talk. Really what I wanted to do was express my experience as a woman within a nature-based spiritual practice. And I hadn't, there was nothing else there on the market. There were no books that were talking about it in that respect. The books talking about Native American spirituality and other things like that, other nature-oriented religions, but not a British one. So I wanted to write, and I've always written, I've always scribbled and burbled and written a few unpublished novels. And
so if somebody bought this book again or have already read it, what would you want them to take from it? When they put it down, what do you want them to say?
To feel a sense, to be inspired to find their own freedom, a freedom of their own voice, a freedom to feel who they are. There are many people who can't quite find their own spiritual or religious expression, their own language, to work out how to really find an understanding of the sacred when they don't perhaps feel comfortable in a Christian setting or another established religious organization or temple or church. And this is really talking about natural religion. People can sit in their garden and talk to the stars and listen to the birds and find God all around them as well as within them. I use the word God. It's not necessary to use the word God even, just to find something that's sacred, a sense of value, and a morality and ethics that are based on nature, perhaps, rather than a man-made rule or something transcendent.
It's interesting what you say. I'll tell you what's jumped into my mind. I'm a 68-year-old man. I've lived. I'm not particularly religious. I lost my religion after I lost my mother. The most wonderful time, I live in a beautiful place. The other side of Liverpool is a place called the Wirral, and we have an island that I just walk to all the time because it just gives me so much pleasure. But the biggest thing for me is going home, because I work late nights, going home at 4 o'clock in the morning when there is virginal snow, putting a coat on and walking everywhere where there's no one about.
How wonderful. Where nature is everything around you.
Yeah.
And I know in the world you get wonderful wild winds, don't you?
Oh, especially today, yes. But it's a really nice feeling. And the other day, and I can't believe we never spoke before, and I'm saying this to you. The other day, I was down at West Kirby looking over to Hilbury Island, which is the island I love, thinking, if I die, I'm never going to see this again. That really upset me, that.
Well, in Druidry, in a Druid terminology, we would say, well, you will become a part of it. You'll become a part of the winds and the rain and the sea and the earth. And your songs will be sung by the birds and the wind and the ocean. So you'll become a part of nature.
That's a nice feeling.
And your ancestors that are within you and around you, you'll become one of the ancestors so that you'll be with those who are walking as in the steps that you've walked, and you'll be a part of them as well.
Do you know what? You might have a convert here. I've been looking for a long, long time to find somebody, and you make an awful lot of sense. Awful lot of sense.
Well, there's something about a religion which is about nature, which is about sense. Yeah. It's rational, it's sensible, it's something you can feel, something you can experience. You don't have to believe in anything you can't touch or bite or smell. It's right here. Yeah. And that's why it's easy. Perhaps that's why it's attractive to youngsters as well, and people who are a bit cynical or who have had some great hopes smashed. It's about what you can really be a part of and make a difference.
Emma, do Druids get a bad press or any press?
Well, when I wrote the book in the 90s, it was still difficult. Through the 80s and 90s, the tabloid press was still, trying to get scandal stories in a way that I don't think they do now. They certainly don't about Druids. Now and then you get, Druids who dress up in funny clothes and stamp around at Stonehenge, and I don't know any Druids that do that, really. They tend to be, fringe order Druids or people who are just, out there to cause a fuss and get in the papers. Most Druids are the sort of folk that you couldn't tell they were Druids. They're ordinary folk. They dress in ordinary clothes. They work in ordinary jobs. Most of them are either usually involved in caring professions, in teaching and nursing and, things like that, and arts. So you won't know the druids that are around you. It's only the druids that sort of hang around, you know, making a song and dance of themselves that carry on allowing druids to get a bad press, because it allows the papers to take the mickey, really.
Yeah. You mentioned Stonehenge. I went recently for the first time ever in my life, because I was down that part of the world. Uh-huh. And it doesn't mean anything to me that it would to you, but I also was quite taken back by it.
I find it a fascinating place. It's, you know, surrounded by fencing and you can't get into the middle of it. It actually seems quite small from a distance. But there are times 20 or 30 years ago where I don't tell anyone this, but with the permission of the security guards in those days who knew me, I'd sit in the middle of the circle by myself in the middle of the night, just meditating or listening to the winds. And it's an extraordinary place. It's like, for a Christian, perhaps going to, you know, an extraordinary cathedral. You have to be open to it. And if you look at an extraordinary cathedral when it's jam-packed with tourists and children running around screaming and people putting money in boxes, you know, it loses a lot of its feel. And the same is true of Stonehenge. But if you're there by yourself, if I'm there, I haven't been for many years, but it had a wonderful serenity, but also a melancholy about it. I mean, it is there out on the plains with army land all around. You can hear the cannons going off. It's not a comfortable place.
Is it a sort of cathedral for druids?
For some druids, but because druidry is very much about nature, it tends to be where druids are looking out, just like you are, Peter. Like what's important to you is the landscape immediately around you when you go home. And the same is true of most druids. What's most sacred to them is the forests around them, the fields, even the park or their garden if they're in the city. It's nature around them locally, and that's what they're looking after. Because you start where you are, where your feet are, and they're from there, then you start stretching out to the rest of the world, you know, in care and responsibility. But for druids that live in Liverpool, I mean, Stonehenge is a long way away.
Yeah.
For druids who live in Scotland, they have their own sacred sites, in the back of their garden, as well as, you know, ancestral sites where we might have stone circles or cairns still there. So it's not like the centre of the world, but now, it's an interesting ancestral site.
Now, you mentioned that you've moved away from what you were. Did you consciously do it one day? Was there something happened in your life that said, it's time to move on?
A couple of things, but mostly I think there's a natural process for people, for seekers, for people who are always looking for a way of peace and meaning, meaningful, useful lives. There were many years where I was teaching Druidry and talking about Druidry in universities and on the radio or in groups, wherever it was, in colleges, whatever. And there came a point where I felt that I was talking about it more than practicing it. And I think that's quite common for people on a spiritual journey. You come to a point where actually you need to withdraw a bit in order to deepen your own understanding. And go a little bit more inside, become a bit more of a mystic maybe than a priest. And I think that's really my path.
So when you die, and hopefully it's not for many, 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 many years, are you buried in the ground or as a druid or what?
Yes, many druids will choose burial rather than cremation because environmentally it takes up a lot less fuel, it's not polluting. Cremation is very polluting of the atmosphere, and it uses a huge amount of natural fuel, whereas burial is more natural. We go back to the earth, and that's what I would choose, and hopefully with a lot of quiet meditation, gentleness. The most important thing as individuals is to die in peace, with peace, expressing peace around us, so that those who are left behind have a sense of our peace in our passing, in our release. That's important. So there is a responsibility about how we die as individuals. But also one thing, because Druidry is based on nature, we often think that the seasons teach us how to die. Mm. I mean, the leaves are falling off the trees now, and the cold is coming in, and the days are getting shorter and darker. And in some ways, every year we're taught how to release, how to let go, how to find peace as we go into winter, and then rebirth with the spring.
Wow.
And that helps in that process of getting older and learning how to die peacefully.
Emma, you're an interesting lady. I've got to ask one more question before I go. When we rang you to do this interview, you answered with a statement which we sort of both, my producer and myself, went, what? Tell me what you say when I ring you up.
My day job now, what I do, what I focus on, is that I run a natural burial ground. So my job is to care for people who are dying, to care for families as when they lose someone. And we have a natural burial ground where we're creating a nature reserve so that people can be buried in a nature reserve with a tree planted on the grave or buried in wildflower meadows in a natural way, in a way that is environmentally ethical. Mm-hmm. So it's creating this beautiful place, but also socially ethical so that it can be very affordable for people who have very little money. You never have to get into debt to bury a loved one.
So you answer the phone by saying?
Sunrising Natural Burial Ground. That's the name of the natural burial ground, Sunrising.
Emma, you're absolutely fascinating. The book's called Spirits of the Sacred Grove, The World of a Druid Priestess. It was first published in 1998, and it's out again. Emma, thank you so much for joining me.
It's a real pleasure. All the best to you.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show. This is Late Night City with Pete Price on City Talk 105.9.